Yeah,
okay, so what is the conundrum?
Well, here's my packet from UGA. Oh yeah, I did get a pennant. And then they also sent me a nice letter. They were like, we're really excited. So I got accepted into the University of Georgia, get a master's in higher education admin.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I'm into it. Christy knows.
I'm very excited.
I like students.
I mean, for you.
I like students. Fine. not as much as Christy does, though. That's well known. They sent me a whole bunch of swag, like a cup and a book, and they're like, we're so excited. And then I was like, how do we navigate higher education in the midst of financial chaos, fuckery?
Chaos. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it is. And I mean, this isn't even me getting like a foot, this is adding to my CV. I mean, I don't have to pick UGA, but you know, it's adding to it. And everyone's just very confused. Like, I mean, I don't want to like say anything crazy, but like these next couple years, if they don't figure it out, are you still there? You are hella blurry.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, cool.
I know.
If they don't figure it out, like, I don't know about the state of higher ed. Like, if they can't get, like,
I know, it's all very, it's very deeply concerning. We were at a faculty.
I deferred for a year because I was like, could it get worse? Yeah. The answer is it could, but I sure don't know what I'm doing right now. So might as well not know what I'm doing next year.
Yeah. I mean, putting it off is not a terrible plan, but no, we were at a faculty meeting in the beginning of the year, and they said that normally in recessions, people go to school, and it's like a very common thing to see higher ed enrollment go up when a recession happens, and that's not happening this time, and it's making everybody kind of panic. And I'm like, yeah, because
nobody knows how to
go to school.
Like, funding.
The funding is all out of whack, and
right, like, you know, you're talking to someone who is a
putting caps on things that are unreasonable or whatever. Like, you're just eliminating a whole swath of people.
Chris, you're breaking up.
Go to school, so it's a mess.
I may be by myself. Well, what I was saying is that I'm trying to navigate this, and I have a PhD, and I've gotten an undergraduate and a master's in the U.S. and I worked at the universities in the U.S. Like, I did this. I wasn't a financial advisor, but I helped students along the way. And it's like, if we can't figure it out, then how are students supposed to figure it out? And part of that too is the Department of Education was just like, their website was like, you shall not pass. For a long time. And you're just like, and I think you can do the fast fun stuff now, but like, I already have student loans, shock horror. So I was like,
yeah.
Anyway, the whole thing was just like, and so I deferred, but I don't know how a lot of institutions, especially when they're getting rid of a lot of the like diversity scholarships and stuff like that, like how they're going to survive.
Yeah, I know. It is terrifying for a lot of, I mean, not even just because you and I are in higher ed. It's also like a terrible thing to do to a country because you're just removing the option of necessary education from whole populations. Like, nobody can just, not nobody, but like very few people can just pay for college outright, you know, without some kind of either parent loan or student loan, you know? And so when you're like, okay, now we're going to limit it even more to people, you're just saying like anyone who is lower or middle class definitely is not getting an education. And then, but like most of our areas need an education. Like you can't have doctors, you can't have engineers, you can't have, you know, computer technology people. Like there's practical things that need people to go to school. So it's just, I mean, it's incredibly short-sighted.
If you want to see a real masterclass, yeah, in how bad this has gotten, just do a little bit of a deep dive into North Carolina and education, as in like primary and secondary education, because they have really screwed themselves. Like they started with like, we're getting rid. North Carolina actually had a really, as education goes, was pretty progressive in the way that it approached stuff, even at that, at high school and lower. They gave grants and they were really robust in their grant giving for people to get this education to do these jobs, because they knew they needed them to do that, because it's a tough gig. Let's be real. You get paid like $30,000 to wrangle children. No, thank you. But God bless you at the same time. So they did, well, now they took those away in North Carolina, or at some schools, I should say, but some of the bigger ones. And then, well, all of a sudden, Mecklenburg County, which is where I live in Charlotte, oh, well, they have huge gaps in teachers because they don't have enough teachers.
Yeah.
To do their schools.
Yeah.
Okay. A plus B equals C here. So now they're saying you don't even, I can't remember what the final word, but it's something like you don't have to have trainer, you don't have to have a degree, you can just like, and this isn't even like Teach for America style. They're just throwing in there.
Yeah, this is happening in Florida too, where they just are like, if you served in the military, you can teach. And it's like, that's not
at it's something all, like
the skill that. Level. Like
right.
Yeah, like the military same teaches thing. You skills for sure, but the skills that it's teaching you are not how to be a good educator for K through 12, especially if you're getting into like some of the upper right. level subject areas. And even in Colorado, I know one of my friends is, she works for an elementary school, and she said they've been having, you know, the educational assistants, like the people who help the teachers in elementary rooms.
Yeah. They've had paraprobes.
Yeah, paraprobes.
We used to call them paraprobes.
She said that her school has had a position posted and they don't have any applicants. Like they have not had applicants for ages. So they're low on the people who help the teachers. The teachers then can't do their jobs. I mean, we're really just watching the country descend into, I don't know, some kind of hellscape, because restricting higher ed like that trickles immediately down into no one being educated. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're fine. I just can't tell if it's a delay or what, or if we're just excited about this topic.
I think we're both just mad.
I mean, that's also fair. It's because you're so blurry. Your face isn't matching up with your mouth. So I can't tell if you're
saying it. I know. Y'all.
So if we just like blatantly overrun each other. Whereas my camera, you can see every zit that is on my face right now, which is a wild thing.
The good news is that
you're in the actual room.
Next week, I will have a better recording situation because I have a new iPad thingy coming, but I'm locked out of it at the moment and the IT people have it. So I had to use the old laptop lady who barely works.
Did they not give you a work computer? Did I not give you a work computer?
I did, but I don't. It's heavy. It's huge. I can't lug that around.
Okay.
It's like.
So now I'm feeling less sorry for you right now.
It's too big. But no, so I have something. It's coming. It's just not present at the moment. And I was hoping we could like, look, I have a new thing to record on and we would be so excited. But then anyway, but it's coming next week. Stay tuned.
But no, you're just still a horror movie.
Meanwhile.
Very nice horror film. So guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where we're doing well. We're not angry. And it makes total sense. education. Because have you seen the stats about people who are educated who vote for Trump? Not so great for him. So why would he support it? It's not his people.
Like, really shocking.
I don't know, just for the basic common good. And laugh.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Oh, the anger.
Anyway.
The anger swells.
Oh, it's okay. I mean,
but
it swells. So welcome to Theology on the Rocks. We are drinking our favorite. The topic today is Scottish related. So we are both drinking the drink that would be our go-to in Scotland.
Yes.
Many of you have known me as a red wine drinker, which is accurate. And a white wine drinker. Sorry, Christy. No. However, in Scotland, right? In Scotland, now I know there is a delay based on your face. One of the things you learn is you drink for Americans drink really hard and fast. I've discovered that. Like, they're like, if you hear things in the background, I have another kitten.
Yeah. Leah's got a new foster kitten. If you're in North Carolina and you want a cat.
I have a new foster kitten that was underneath my neighbor's house. Really snuggly, but really forget that the kitten stage is a real stage. It's not like a puppy stage, but man, because they're smarter. Sorry. Well, I mean, like, they use a litter box. They can poop in a box and don't have to be, but they are hella destructive. So anyway, if you hear me screaming or you hear crashing, it's the kitten. Because if I lock the kitten away in the bathroom, the kitten cries. That was part of the conundrum at the beginning. I also have, this is going to come back to the drink. I also have two of our fellow podcasters coming to stay with me this weekend. Trip Fuller of Homebrew Christianity and Josh Patterson of Rethinking Faith. Because they're doing some like white boy process party or something.
And blue shoes getting together.
Process of circle jerking. But so they're going to be here, which is great. But I also have a dog and I have a foster cat. I have three regular cats. I have a dog. I have three boys that are of human form that will be. So I'm the only girl in the house this weekend, basically, is what you need to know. And I'm feeling it very much. So my conundrum is that I need to negotiate. I have a fairly big house, like, but I also have a lot of things that need to be in motion at the same time. Anyway, my drink. My drink is cider because that's, I know, as soon as I heard myself, I was like, oh, whatever, no one cares. You're feeling sorry for yourself in your big old house in North Carolina and having friends
and your visitors and your multiple
animals. Anyway, I drink and my animals. I mean, you can feel sorry for me about the animals, actually. That part I accept. It is a hell of my own creation, but man, I'm trying to do good in this world and it's rough as frick. So the drink is cider, and that's what I used to drink. Magners specifically, although Strongbow if pushed. And I would, that was my on the journey, because Scottish people tend to drink in what they call sessions. We're going for a sesh. And whilst I would love to drink red wine for 8 hours straight, and last weekend I drank it, I was out of my house from 12 to 8 p.m. watching college football. Which is a long time for this 43-year-old to be out in the world. Wait, what?
Oh. Wait.
I mean, both our teams won, so we're not OH. I thought you said, oh, wait. I was like, I mean, there's nothing to fight about this week, except for the fact that I said, if you re-listen to our podcast before last weekend, you should be a freaking sports commentator, because I said, they've put Texas at number one. Because of that freaking Manning, except that we beat them twice last season. Pretty handedly.
You and I
watched one of them at a restaurant in Colorado.
We did. I remember that.
So I was like, why are they number one?
They never should have been.
I was so happy. And then, you know, they never should have been. And so you go back and listen to the podcast. And I said, y'all are going to win. Like, there's not, this isn't, I don't. And then all the commentators are like, well, and I'm like, no, No. And you asked about, he's a junior. He was a sophomore last year, apparently.
Yes, we did find out he's a junior instead of, I thought he was a baby.
Still.
Like a freshman or something, but no. I'm not as impressed by him as I feel
the real disaster of the weekend.
Like, we were supposed to be really impressed by
him. No one was.
I'm just not.
He was less than 50%. Like, there was nothing. He has a name, and I feel bad for the kid. I kept saying this during the game. I was, like, watching it. And I was like, that's a lot of pressure to have on him. But, like, you can't base the whole thing. I mean, Bill Belichick is a real good example who was the true disaster of the weekend. You can't base everything on a name. Like, that kid isn't even from the sperm of those two idiots. He's adjacent.
So what I had read. You know who I mean
by the two idiots.
Yeah, what I had read and was hearing last weekend, and I know that our listeners in particular are thrilled that this is happening again.
You're really watching sports when you're on a sesh is the
problem. You know, yeah, sports, a sesh involves a sport, and you're right, and you have to have something that's not too hard and fast, or you're gonna be blackout real fast and everyone will make fun of you. His mom is like a really talented athlete, and so they kept saying like he gets this from his mom, and that apparently his dad was really good until he got injured. But like, I do feel like there's a lot of like ifs, and you know, it's just the name, and maybe in a different system he'd be doing better, but like he's just not. And I'm sorry for
him. He can be really good. Terrible for him. He can be.
Like, genuinely, that's got to be the worst amount of pressure.
The worst. And they just kept, those commentators were, like, doubling down on, like, even after y'all's game, because our game was on after as we played the luxurious Marshall. we were on after you guys. And they just doubled down. And they're like, well, he's still, and I'm like, guys, here's the deal. That hype that you heard for Texas v. Ohio State, we heard it last year when we were having to play them home in Austin. And I was like, that was when we were in Colorado. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And we were psyched up, all of those feelings. And those commentators were saying the exact same thing. And that team,
you were nervous. Nah, 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 nah.
And we rocked up. I was nervous. And you should be, based on the stuff you're hearing. And then we came in and we were like, it's not like he was, and this is what I'm saying. It's not that he's playing for a D1 school that was number one in the SEC, but also in the conference, the whole conference. It's like, he's not bad. You don't have to justify like, oh, well, we know he's there, but he's not like, you know,
he's not
going to save
the
world. He's not going to.
He's not Eli.
I say this with the most amount of anger that I can muster. He's not Peyton. He's not going to ruin my. I had flashbacks of the 90s of him ruining my life for at least three straight seasons. As she flashes her red and black nails, that he was going to destroy me and my soul and whatever else for three. And then we played him, and I was like, and you and I were watching in that restaurant, and I was like, oh. Yeah. So then, fast forward to this season, it was all the hype, and I was like, this is like the same thing again. It's just that Christy and the like haven't heard it, because they're not in the SEC, but we heard it all last year, and you saw the result of it. And then we beat him again.
Yeah. I'm hoping this is the end of the hype.
Anyway, and our team last year was... We beat him with a broken arm. Quarterback had a broke ass arm. Remember? That was that play where he came up. It's just like dangling. And they were like, well, and then they ran it across. And all of us were like, what did you think he was going to do?
God.
Sure, okay. Wasn't going to throw it unless it was with his face. Okay, All I know, football, you're trying to shut me up. It's fine.
No,
I can read the room. However, our listeners like to know our kids. So this we do session drinks. My session drink is a cider. And I hit the red wine later because if not, you're quite right. I'd be dead in the grave. What is yours?
Mine is a gin and tonic because a gin and tonic is like I'm drinking water. I can do this all day and have with Rika, our dear friend, many a time. I did break out the
gin and tonic all day long.
Oh yeah. Oh, Rika and nice. I. It's, well, you know, in Scotland, this is the thing I miss desperately, is that in Scotland, the gin is cheap, but it's also good. Like, you don't get the crappy gin. You can get the good gin, and it's cheap. And they just hand you a bottle of tonic. And so you pay for the gin, and then you pay for the tonic separately. But I would just put only a little bit of the tonic. So that tonic could get me through 2 or 3 gins. And so I was like, spread my money out, you know, my poor PhD self. But
you're like the box wine of mixed drinks.
But I broke out the good gin for tonight and finished it off. It's Lussa. It's a really good one. From the Isle of Jura, which is your favorite whiskey. So that's
it's Talisker, but close.
Okay. Well, the whiskey that you recommend every time I ask you what whiskey should I get for somebody, you and Stuart say, So
the Highlands and Islands, Highlands and Islands are smoky. We like the peaty whiskey.
Yeah,
I'm going to murder a cat. I'm not. Guys, that's the least I would do, but I am real close to throwing my Georgia Bulldog paper holder. My nails, they're like, do you want to come? No, I don't want to come. Nope. Gin and tonic. Well, I mean, I on the other hand don't like gin and tonic because I think it tastes like, I agree that it tastes like water. I don't think it tastes of much, which is on a hot day fine. On
it's a million degrees here.
I don't know.
No, but in Scotland, it was still a good
one. Christy, I know where you are because I'll be there like next weekend. Anyway, inside thoughts. Gin and tonic, and we are still in our summer of rejection tour.
We are.
I have not summer. Given up.
According to the calendar, it's still summer.
Because, let me see what the actual temperature is here so I don't lie. We're about the same. 81.
Oh,
still in there. Oh, what happened?
It's 86. Ooh, that's just bright AF. It's 86 here.
Ooh.
I can't show it to you, but it's 86.
We're still in our summer of rejection tour. I'm presenting. Oh, announcements. I will say we do have our band book group that's up. A poll, I believe, or maybe it's not up anymore, but we'll put it back up just to see. I don't know if we got the answers for last time.
We had a tie, so yes, we have.
Did we get answers
for a tiebreaker? Yeah, but
right. We'll so
announce shortly which book.
Whenever we break the tie, we talked about Beer Camp last year. I'm going to be on Homebrewed with Joshua Patterson and Trip Fuller. Tomorrow. She says. Tomorrow, and it's at 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's live. I'm pretty sure it's live. Okay, cool. Do you like how I am? They just throw me on things. I said I'd go. It's in a bar, so I was like, I'll go. Sure, let's do it. This is not how I used to be, just so you know. This is 15 years in at this stage. So that'll be great. And please check it out on, I usually watch on Facebook, but I'm sure you can watch other places. I'm 100, so I don't know what those places
are. Yeah, We'll put something on the Insta.
Well, we can link to it for sure. They're at a open and relational theology conference, which I joke that I don't know anything about. I know quite a bit about at this stage because I've had to look at it because they forced me to for various conversations that we have. I find it closely akin to process theology. If you know what that stuff is, it's a phrase coined. Like we like to do. We like to rebrand stuff, add some little flares in there. So they're doing a conference about that in Charlotte. And they didn't ask me to speak at the conference.
I'm shocked.
Just being me yelling nine. I know, I'm super shocked. I am the premier process person. I don't know why they wouldn't have me there. Although they'd love to call me out anytime I say anything slightly related to that, they'll be like, oh, you're in it. And I'm like, no, my God is bigger than that. I know it's complicated. That's where mystery is. I'm a pseudo Catholic.
Yeah, same.
And then, what happens when we die. Really keen to know.
Planned meetup with Thomas Hermans Webster to have a drunken fight about process theology at beer camp this year. So we're very excited about it. It'll just be us yelling at each other and probably slipping into me just yelling nine a lot. Cause why not?
I feel like we come across, especially cause we're women. I think it's really interesting in theology. You can come across people will be like, oh, you're being like, really quote aggressive or competitive. And it's interesting because you and I both grew up in these worlds where it was just common to discuss. So I'll say things. We have a theology group chat with some other folks and I'll say something and they're like, no, but they're really cool. And I'm like, I'm not talking about them as humans. Talk about their theology. I'm like, they can be the coolest person in the world.
I'm still going to disagree with them.
Talking about what they're writing.
Look, I love Josh Patterson, and I will sit there and cheer him on and emphatically smile and also simultaneously disagree with everything he's saying. It's fine.
I mean, yeah, pretty much. I was trying to think of anything. Some of the radical theology stuff I can get on board with, but you should listen to the podcast that I was on with him recently, and that pretty much... I think laid out where I am in terms of process. It was pretty clear cut there. It's bullshit. Anyway, we love you boys.
We love you.
Oh my God, we do. We love you. You're just wrong, and that's okay. It happens.
Okay.
It happens.
Sometimes people are wrong.
Well, Christina, just keep repeating that as we drink our drink. Sometimes people are wrong and they may have a really big following. They're still wrong. They're really good at spreading their wrong ideas.
Look, you know what, we're all flawed humans. We can't all be perfect. We can't all be as brilliant as Leah and I are. We can't all be as humble as Leah and I are.
Lord Jesus. This is what we had to do because we were women in the academy, is they forced us into this.
You want to get mad at me? You let me you about all of the times that I was told, oh, but you're a woman, you know.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
I know. Anyway. It's been a rough path. So this particular article, for background, I was teaching at the University of Glasgow at the time, and I did my PhD on violence, religion, violence, and peace building in Northern Ireland, basically. So you get pigeonholed a lot. I mean, I'm the practical theology person now for life, but you also get pigeonholed in terms of some of this stuff regionally. So when I was in Scotland, I never left Scotland. I did my fieldwork in Ireland. All of a sudden they were like, oh, well, you do sectarianism stuff. And I was like, well, in Ireland, yeah. I do that stuff. And that basically evolved a little bit. I met a guy, or multiple guys, who we started this dialogue, who worked for the Scottish government. And you have to keep in mind, Scotland, that sounds very important, but Scotland's about the size of, like, Georgia. So, like, or if that.
Yeah, it's that. It's really small.
It's quite a small country as it Right. So it'd be like me getting an audience with, like, the mayor of Atlanta. Like, it's not, you know, it's great. And you know, but whatever. So there was a project going on within the Scottish government that has since been defunded. But it was called Sense Over Sectarianism, or SOS. And that particular group basically read what I did. I did a ethnography in Northern Ireland, so I did a lot of background work on the history and a lot of stuff about theology. I even read our resident Karl Barth and his Theology of Reconciliation, which helped me nothing. But I sure did. Now it's there. So I did that, and then I did interviews and did a lot of field work, a lot of observation, all that kind of stuff. So Sense Over Sectarianism kind of wanted me to do a similar project for them that they could put into their promotional material. And if I could, like, not dumb it down, but make it, we talked about this last week, make it consumable for people to read. So I wrote an academic article out of that. I did the report, and that went in, and that was all fine and well. And then I wrote an academic article. And so this is the academic article. And the reason you might say, well, yeah, it got accepted into, you know, this report. Well, it did, but I could never get it published in an academic journal. And it's called The Sash My Father Wore, which is a traditional song that is sung at football games. And so what I did with the project, essentially, with SOS, is that I went into... This is wild to think about in 2025. This was 2000 and I think probably like 10 or 11. And I got permission to go into schools, like secondary schools in Scotland, and interview, we'll do surveys with students. And so, I was able to go into 4 schools, 2 Protestant, 2 Catholic schools, or 2 state schools. 2 Catholic schools. So in Scotland, they're designated as state schools or Catholic schools, essentially. Although, kind of like here in that way. They're public schools, but if you're Catholic, you typically go to a Catholic school. Shout out, Helen, if you're listening. So I was able to go in and to interview students in those, which was about, or started to do surveys about sectarianism, which was, one, way out of my comfort zone. And 2, also just kind of unprecedented at the time. It wasn't something that you were able to get in easily. Because sectarianism in Scotland has a different flair, I should say, as well.
I was just going to ask.
The flair is sports related.
Yeah. If you could give, like, a really quick definition or kind of sum of what sectarianism in Scotland would look like for people not familiar with that.
I'll read you the abstract of this article, because that's kind of what... Yeah. So the abstract is as follows. It's not long. Scholarship in the area of sectarianism in the Scottish context has remained ripe with disagreement. There's a constant debate as to the impact, if any, that sectarianism in Scotland has on the greater population. Areas of discussion have included research on the existence of anti-Catholic sentiment in the workplace, as well as sectarian-related violence in sporting events. Those who research these social issues have managed to use statistics to back up claims that sectarianism does and simultaneously does not exist in Scotland. One area of study within this debate that has not been properly explored is the impact that sectarian beliefs have on learning amongst young people. This article uses a commission pilot to illustrate how students have become so accustomed to football-related understandings of historical events and religious affiliations that they have lost the ability to disassociate those thoughts when faced with contrary facts in the classroom. I will argue that continued anti-sectarian intervention must take place in the classroom so that students are able to fully grasp the diverse historical and cultural background of Scotland. So essentially, you have a lot of, there is a book that came out by Steve Bruce called The Myth of Sectarianism. And his big quote in that is, "The sectarianism of Scotland is a myth, popular in some places, but a myth nonetheless." So a lot of the stuff about sectarianism that we see in Northern Ireland is Catholic versus Protestant. So sect at its very sort of core is this idea that something that is a part of a whole has split, essentially. So you see it with Sunni and Shia Muslims as well. People would say that's sectarianism because they're a part of one religious group. And so, you know, Christianity has Catholics, have Protestants, have Eastern Orthodox, but the sectarian comes from that, those two groups fighting. Now, in Northern Ireland, there's a lot of stuff that is about colonialization and who colonized Ireland, and also a lot about territory, a lot about allegiances. Are you British? Are you Irish? Like that kind of thing. Football plays a certain part in that. But in Scotland, what we see is that there is sectarianism, but it is a different flair. And it, of course, you think of the Troubles and you think of all of the stuff in Northern Ireland and you're like, well, Scotland doesn't have it that bad. It can't possibly. But what we see is that it rears its ugly head in sports. And as Christy and I talked about as we got so excited, sports, you know, can make you very, very intense and excited. It's something like religion. It can just make you want to scream and yell. And so what we see is that basically, much like a lot of religious systems and social systems, is that sectarianism gets used as a means essentially to create a divide in soccer or football, historically between Rangers and Celtic in Glasgow, to some degree Hibs and Hearts in Edinburgh, but you don't really see as much. You get the Old Firm, you get this intensity where you can't even drink at the games. I went to a bunch of games. You had to leave separate exits. Like you can't wear tops that support one of those or any team to like
any team
bars because people get in such any team, such intense fights about it. So it's become this thing of like, people are like, well, it's just sports. That's what Bruce is saying here. Mm-hmm. He's saying it's not about religion. And my argument in this article is that actually it doesn't matter if it's religion anymore because it's become a thing. It's using religion, you know, even in a social sense, it's using it to say, like, if you're a Catholic, well, you support Celtic, right? Like that. I mean, it's adding fuel to this fire. And, you know, we see every year that the Old Firm matches is what the Celtic and Rangers is the meeting is called. And it's just, it ends in a lot of violence. Sometimes not. But you know, historically it has. And so that was sort of what I was writing about, to see like how those mentalities trickled down to young people. Like, were they picking up on it and what were they thinking? And so I had to figure out, I had to read a lot of child psychology books about how I was going to go about surveying. I knew I didn't want to do an interview because there were too many of them and I wanted more information. So I gave them surveys. It was probably like a 10-page survey. There were some pictures. Tell me how these pictures make you feel. What does this make you feel? And I made sure to say, you can't finish early. Like, you are going to sit here. So, because I knew some of them would just be like one word. Durr. And I was like, we are going, nobody can look at each other's papers. You do this. I put them in folders that you couldn't see through. And I said, you finish it. And if you finish it, you sit there. So you decide, right? So all of this, I definitely looked at a lot of child psychology books for a lot of this. But what I found was really interesting. And I got a pretty good spread of folks in terms of stats. 21% were Catholic of the people that I interviewed. 26% were Protestant. 43%, which does give you an indication of Scotland, identified as none. So you get that as well. Some of these, quite a significant portion. Pretty good split, 52 who identified as male, 46% who identified as female. The rest, they were allowed to not answer because honestly, I mean, I was interested a little bit in that, but not so much. Most of them are white.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really giving you the demographics of Scotland at this stage. 94% were white. Indian, Black, Pakistani, and didn't want to answer, essentially. We had some Sikhs and some Muslims, but again, they represented about 4%. So this is really just, again, solid, basically. So I gave them some words to start with, and I said, tell me what you associate with this particular word. Do you know it? So it was words that are often used as slurs. You get Feeny and Hun, Billy Boy and a Tim, which again are all Catholic Protestant sort of slurs. And I looked at the different demographics. What you see is for the most part, the students didn't really know what the words meant, except in relation to football. And even then they weren't really like the names. Again, these are they're secondary students. So it was S1 and S2. So they're probably going to be like 15 or 16, right? So they didn't really know the words. That was something that came across. Once you start getting into pictures, that is where they shined. So I had a whole bunch of different pictures. Some of them were quite vague. Some of them were simply pictures of colors, like blue or green. I had a four-leaf clover. I had the word Protestant. And I had the word Catholic. I had some IRA graffiti, some anti-Muslim graffiti, some anti-Polish graffiti. I had Neil Lennon and Ally McCoist, who are both famous for their football. And so this is where you start to get good examples, because essentially the pictures, so this is just one student survey. The IRA graffiti, what does that make you feel like? That Ireland hates us. The Rangers badge, I feel happy and great. Celtic badge, angry. Catholic, hate. Protestant, good. Four-leaf clover, very angry. Crown, happy. Blue, great. Green, very angry. Neil Lennon, angry, very, 100 times very.
Wow.
Ally McCoist, wish he was in my family. He's a hero. So that was one. There's one kid who just went, hate it, love it, hate it, love it. England flag, hate it. Union Jack, love it. Red Hand of Ulster, love it. Ireland flag, hate it. The Queen, like it. So didn't love it.
Okay.
The Pope. These are all just pictures of these people. The Pope, hate it. Rangers badge, love it. Celtic badge, hate it. Again, on and on it goes. Blue, love it. Green, hate it. So this is where you started to get this kind of like orange walk. I had a picture of the orange walk. Makes me really happy because my granddad's in it. The Queen makes me feel happy. This kid's just happy. Makes me feel happy because she is our queen and she does good for us.
Okay.
May she rest in peace.
R.I.P. Lizzie.
So there was a lot of this. R.I.P. Liz. Basically, I said, you know, my conclusion was that while sectarianism, I'm going to read this. This will mean having to name sectarian in Scotland, a country that does not have walls dividing communities or the stratified parliament of Northern Ireland. This naming has been avoided even by those who are funding anti-sectarian initiatives. And with scholars at each other's throats about research within this context, it's not hard to see why. Any definition that comes out and is used as a basis for anti-sectarian work will be debated to the highest degree. I'm sure the information I have provided will be subject to this criticism. At some stage, however, there must be a pragmatic measure in place that has names and objectives. So essentially, I listed some of the songs that they sing, and they're pretty brutal if you look up some of the songs that they sing at football. I said, these songs at the very heart are a retelling of history. Yeah, they're rough. And the passion associated with the historical context from whence they were written has been filtered into the passion of competitive sports. While their positions are one-sided, they create in those who sing them a sense of identity. This identity has, for too long, been limited to the football field. The students within these surveys have suffered from this association. They have no concept of the 12th or the significance of Enniskillen or the famine or the Irish Rebellion. These events are not sectarian in and of themselves. They are elements of the historical backgrounds necessary to understanding the culture of Scotland. Likewise, the students have a general lack of understanding about differing religious groups as well as Christian denominations. They've simplified complex historical and religious issues into a manageable either-or system. And we as educators and parents are too busy bickering about what sectarian is not or is to address this problem of cultural literacy. So that was kind of my conclusion, is that, you know, there's huge debates in Scotland about sectarianism, and I've done panels where people have, you talk about people disagreeing with you, like, they will, I mean, go off on you if you say sectarianism exists in Scotland, because there is a Scottish pride that is really, really prevalent, that yes. wants to push back on that and says, you know, yes. we're above that, you know. Yes. And it's like, well, I mean, sure, but, you know, and they want to say it's all about sports. And so that was kind of my pushback there, and said, I agree, but like, if these kids meet the kids at the other school,
the thing,
how are they going to treat them, essentially?
Yeah. The thing that I think, sorry to interrupt, but the thing that I think is so fascinating is that, like, we can say it's all about sports, but it's not actually limited in the ways that these people interact with each other. And it's so much more violent than it's all about sports really indicates, because here we're used to sport rivalries. Like, I've seen some stuff that I think is probably, like, wildly inappropriate at Ohio State games about Michigan. And certainly I have literally walked away from a guy at a bar that I was flirting with because I found out he was an Oakland Raiders fan. He also walked away from me. It was a mutual parting, but, like, but I don't know of a sporting rivalry in the States, and potentially I am wrong, but I don't know of one that has a kind of base level. There's probably going to be a stabbing of some kind. There's going to be violence, and all of the bars in this city have to disallow any sport colors on certain days because of the prevalence of violence. And so to say it's all about sports is just incredibly dismissive. I, again, as you're saying.
Yeah. I think it's not acknowledging that it's much like Northern Ireland when I did that conclusion. Like, it wasn't just religion. But just because it's not just religion doesn't mean that religion's not a factor. Exactly. I think that's what people want to say.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the problem with the word sectarian, is that it lends itself to religious groups. But, you know, come up with a different word, I don't care, but whatever it is, it's a cultural schism, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can use religion, or you can use whatever colonial powers or sports or whatever, but it still exists. And that was kind of my point, is that, you know, I know that a lot of these scholars don't want this to be real. I sure don't either. But yeah. And if the kids had come back and just said, I don't know anything about what you're talking, because as soon as I saw the words where they didn't know, like, what, like, bigotry meant, or, like, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's, or what sectarianism meant, or what, or these names, I was like, cool. As soon as they saw those pictures, though, boom, boom, yep. boom, boom, boom. Yep. Like, it was, yep. And that, those examples were not the outliers. Those were, like, summative. If you're doing qualitative research accurately, I would say, especially with that large of a scale, I probably did surveys for, like, 120 kids or something. Like, you you don't pick the outliers as your sort of set. You bring it all together, but also you try to come up with a more sort of summative thing. And that's what those surveys were, those either ands, you know, with hate it, love it. And when you're in that mindset of just either or, it's like, that's the building blocks of, you know, all the isms that we come to know in 2025.
I think too, it's incredibly dangerous to try to paper over what's going on by saying like, oh, the kids don't know bigotry. Oh, the kids don't know sectarianism. So again, it's quote unquote just sports. Because we can't fix things, we can't address problems if we're not willing to say what they are, you know, and to say, yes, these kids are reacting to sports references, but they're doing it in sectarian traditions and ways. And again, and I don't feel like too, like, this is a specifically kind of Scottish problem because you were right. I think to say that Scotland has a very strong national pride that wants to not be associated with like the troubles or the things that we think about when we think about sectarianism. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different discussion, but like to say, so we're not going to talk about it or we're not going to deal with this or whatever. Like that's not going to solve what's going on. And at the end of the day, like this is genuine violence that's happening. But also like this is a good way for us to look at other divides in other places is to say, we may think that we're past the religion or that we're not practicing that religion anymore, so sectarianism doesn't affect us, but we're not always past the ways that sectarianism divides us. And I think we're also not as far past religions as we often think we are. You know, like we think, oh, modern society, religion is a private affair, keep it to yourself, or I'm not religious anymore, so it doesn't affect me. And we don't address the like very ingrained, deep ways that religion sets society up. And like it's everywhere. And so if we're not willing to look and say, these are the things that are going on, here's where they're coming from, here's why it's going on, and now we can fix the problem instead of just trying to put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound.
Right. And you can see it now. I mean, football aside, like if you look at the Republican Party, I would argue did it with Reagan and consequent, you know, and that's politics, right? So the idea that if you're Christian, you vote for the Republican Party, mm-hmm. you know, or if you're a part of this sort of cultural thing, then you support this party. Honestly, watching some of the party stuff makes me feel like I'm watching the Old Firm match. Because yeah. I'm like, this is exactly what they're doing. They're just using this to, and they figured it out. You know, they figured out that this is the sort of stuff that gets people in an uproar, and then they manipulated it. And that's what's happening, you know, here is we see it, and you're quite right. To ignore it is, and it was interesting getting on some of these, it is to our own detriment, but it was interesting being on some of these panels because and it was mostly men who studied Scottish history who were Scottish, you know, and I'm the American girl that's like, well, this is, you know, this is what they said. And the guys would just get furious, Christy, unlike any, I could talk about bad theology till I'm blue in the face, and I will never make men more furious or human beings more furious, but specifically men in this context, than talking about sectarianism in Scotland. My little American self and all of these brogues going at it. And I was just like, I mean, this is what the kids said. Do you want to, they asked me to do this. I mean, I was into it, but like they approached me because of what I'd done in Northern Ireland. And they're like, well, we're not like Northern. I didn't say you were. In fact, in many points during this article, I'd say it isn't like that. I'm just saying that ignoring it is to the detriment of a generation of people who are children who are going to see things in these either ors. And someone who grew up in the Deep South, I can tell you where that ends up.
Yeah.
I can, and I know that was in the background. It's always in the background in the work that I do. I don't always do a lot of stuff. I've circled back. Actually, I started wanting to do my PhD about religion in the South. And my advisor at Edinburgh said, when I switched to practical theology, my advisor said, you're too close to it. Hmm. You can't do it. When you talk, she was right. She was like, when you talk to me about it, the emotions are too high. You need to go do the project you're going to do in America somewhere that you don't feel that way about. And so I went to Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the background of that in a way. I wanted to study that. So when I look at this, I'm like, okay, yeah, fight me on it. And I can defend it, and I'll defend my methodology, and I'll defend my sources, which, by the way, you guys on this panel are the majority of my sources. But I've seen what can happen when you separate and you put kids in different schools, and then you put people in different, hey, Pen, she's like, frick yeah, Leah, get on it. She's on my train too. When you put people in different schools, you give them different sports teams, you separate people on religion, like, anyway. So this is my final two sentences that concludes this article. This to me is the legacy of sectarianism for students in Scotland. The next generation are taking up their father's sash or their clovers, marching passionately forward with no understanding of what direction they are headed or even why. And until scholars are able to agree on what sectarianism is in Scotland and what practical and unified measures are appropriate to intervene at a school's level, we are likewise acting as blind drum majors for the next generation.
I think that's great. I like
that. So, I mean, this article, again, funded by a country... was completely funded by the Scottish government, by the way, that was the reason I was able to get into those schools. Could not submitted it to, I mean, this one says Harvard. So clearly this was Harvard. I submitted it to probably three, journals, and it got rejected every single time. And one was, the Journal of, I'll box them because it was a Journal of Scottish Education. Yep.
I feel like,
I mean, they rejected it. It's no secrets here, but I'm like, how much more specific can you get before you submit it?
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like important work that probably a lot of people don't necessarily want. I mean, look, like we want a dream of a higher education that is just about public good and furthering progress and ideas and all that kind of stuff. But that's, like, just generally not what, especially the bigger, more quote-unquote important schools do. So they're funded by something, and there's going to be underlying motivations, and there's other kind of stuff that makes them squeamish about controversial subjects. But definitely...
They did not want to print them.
Yeah, it definitely does feel like... I mean, my time in Scotland, I think the first week that I lived there, there was an Old Firm game, an Old Firm match. And my pal that I knew before, like, I had met her prior to moving there, and informed me that there was an Old Firm match, and to not go into city center or specific parts of the city. And I was like, I had lived in Scotland for about 3 days at that stage, and I was so confused about what could possibly be so bad about a soccer match, you know? And
was it an Ibrox or?
I don't remember at this stage, but, and I just didn't even know what the team of the names were. Like, I didn't know anything about this. Mm. I just knew that there was some big football match, and to not go into the populated parts of town because It was dangerous. And I remember thinking, I go to sporting events all the time. I'll be fine, you know? The primary reason that I didn't go out that day is because I was jet lagged. I just was too tired to go anywhere. But the first time, I think that night, actually, I then heard a report about somebody had gotten stabbed. And I was like, oh, this is not a Broncos Raiders game. This is a different thing that I don't know how to navigate without like understanding a little bit better. I remember the first time I experienced an Orange March. We were at a weird little Southern barbecue restaurant in Denniston in Glasgow, and I was having a lovely time drinking a PBR and feeling very American, and then all of a sudden this Orange March just took over the street, and it was this really, and for our listeners, Orange Marches are just a bunch of hateful people that march around the streets during the summer spitting on Catholics and have a marching band of some kind. So but
glorious 12th, they celebrate when William of Orange conquered a bunch of Irish stuff. Basically, it's a Protestant parade. But they try to frame it as sort of like the Masons, except they typically march through neighborhoods that are predominantly Catholic. So they're trying to like stir stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a very. I remember they spit on a Catholic priest one year while I was living there, and it became this whole thing about a hate crime and et cetera. But so it's a really interesting kind of cultural immersion. I love Scotland. I loved my time there. The people that I knew and met were so lovely, and at the same time, recognizing that there was a history that I wasn't familiar with, and simultaneously then being able to come back to the States and look at the histories in the States and recognize where we have similar problems, similar issues, you know, and giving.
What is that Cory Booker quote that if you're not upset about America right now, you don't love her enough or something like that?
Yeah, except it's James Baldwin, I think, is if your heart's not broken by America, you don't love her enough. But I do think that it made the rounds for a bit there. But it's true. I think is an important thing too, is Scottish pride is not a weird kind of subset to it. The thing is, they should want to fix these things because they love Scotland. We should want to fix things because we love America. We should want to fix things because we love the world in general, you know, not pretend like stuff.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think that was the issue too, as I was at the University of Glasgow, which is the center of all of this at the time, which again, when they found out someone who did sectarianism or had written about sectarianism was at Glasgow, they were like, oh, we're going to jump on that. Mm-hmm. I never at any stage, I think a lot of people are like, it's not this, how many times did I hear it's not the same as Northern Ireland? You know what? Racism in South Africa is not the same as racism in the Deep South. It can still be racism, though.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is that to call something a name doesn't equate it to another place. Like, one genocide is not like another genocide. But it can still be what we socially have come to understand as a genocide. And that's what I'm saying, is like, if you want to make a new word for it, go for it. You know, if you want to call it Scottarianism or something, like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But to like say that there's nothing there just feels blind to me. Like, it's clear you can see it. I mean, I worked at an Irish bar when I was in Scotland doing my PhD, had on my Irish bar shirt that had a leprechaun on it, walked past an Orange March on the way to said job and got called a Fenian C word.
My God.
And I looked back. And I was like, what are they talking about? Oh, I've got to look. Because I worked at Irish Bar. I like look back and I went, I'm from Georgia. Okay. He's like 100. Another thing is these orange marshes are like old people.
They're so old. Yeah.
Typically. And I just screamed at him. I'm from the United States. I'm from Georgia. And he just was like, also don't call people cunts on the street.
Yeah.
Basic.
I remember I went into I went into one of our favorite locals, Oren Moore, and I had been previously at the Partick Thistle match. And the Partick Thistle are the third Glasgow team that are not part of this whole sectarian situation, right? It's the safe team. I'm a Partick Thistle fan. I have the scarf. But I sat down at the bar and was told that I had to take the scarf off or I had to leave because they can't allow anything. You know, it was like, this is the Thistle. Thistle doesn't have beef with anybody. We have a weird sun mascot. Like,
except what for are you humanity, about? Which violates our eyeballs. Just the mascot is an abomination from hell. But other than that.
But like, yeah, it was right. It was just a very
non-sectarian abomination.
It was a very sobering moment of like, I can't even wear this scarf because this is a real situation that needs a
trip. So trained that I walked into the Irish Bar to watch 15 hours of college football, and Stuart and I had our Georgia tops on, and because he's in the cult now too, and I walked in and I just had this moment where I forgot where I was because I was drinking Magners with ice in it, which it felt like so Scottish. Yeah. And he had a harp, and I was like, oh God, we have our top. Oh my gosh, we have our. And then I look around and it's like a sea of college football tops. And I was like, oh, I really had a moment there where I was like, we can't come because you don't get in. Christy's right. Like, that person was nice to tell you to take your scarf off because sometimes I'll just boot you right the heck.
I think it's because it was just a scarf and I could put it in my bag and they knew that. If I had been wearing
it, and you're American.
Also, I was American, yeah. They were like, you're just stupid, is what's happening.
I don't know.
You don't know our ways.
Yeah, they had some sectarianism police that would go to the games. No. And then I think it was my last year there, they defunded it because they didn't think that it was worth it, which again, that's debatable. That's up to the council as to how they want to spend that money. One of our colleagues after an Ibrox game, one of my colleagues got her entire mouth knocked out, if you remember that. All of her teeth got knocked out by some Rangers fans.
My God.
Mm. Yeah.
My God.
Yep. True story.
Wow.
Yep.
Well.
Yep. As so that was because she lived here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that doing the work to deal with bad theology or trying to address systemic issues, problems, racism or divides or what have you, I think is very important work. And I am sorry that it didn't get published, but I am very glad that we get to talk about it and hear your work. This is the loveliest part about this series. It feels like fulfilling to the things that we're like excited about. You know? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think, well, yeah, I mean, I think that this work was, and most of the work I do, you could say, oh, she's a hippie do-gooder. And I think I'm enough of a social context person, which everyone knows is my catchphrase. I know where this comes from. Like, this is not out of nowhere. I grew up in, you know, the foothills of Appalachia. Deeply racist area. And then I went to seminary in Atlanta and I was taught, you know, I had forgotten that John Lewis came in and talked to our class one day just because he's friends with the professor.
That's awesome.
MBD. Awesome. Yeah. MBD.
Love it.
So love it's it. Like, I mean, this stuff was kind of built in, like, and, you know, and I was a woman who couldn't get ordained in the Southern Baptist Church, you know, and lived in all of that bullshit of purity culture and stuff like that. So I think when we start to examine ourselves, it's kind of clear where it's interesting that it came out here. And, but I mean, I think it, again, that all stems from my advisor saying, you can't write about this. And me being like, I want to, why are you not letting me do this?
Yeah.
And her being like, you can't do it right now. And now guess what? AAR Southeast, my unit, I have my own unit, Religion in the American South.
I know, I'm very excited about that.
Come it's full circle.
Amazing. It's gonna be amazing. I'm really excited to be able
that
to
is learn. A that's a good way. Yes. It's in Greenville, which is a great little town. If you've not
it's a great
been,
little
it's
town.
Very music it. Oriented.
I love it. Yeah.
Very walkable. Mm-hmm. There is a I now can give you hold on. I now can give you behind the scenes exclusives is that most of the hotels that we are going to have discounts for are downtown, and the campus is off. It's about 7 miles away, but there's going to be a what do you call it? Bus. There'll be a bus.
Oh, a bus. Okay.
That goes back and forth.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. So you can stay. Please do look up AAR Southeast because, we do need some submissions. I'm currently president-elect. Next year, I'll be president.
I gotta get on that.
It's really good, especially
on my list of to-dos.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the whole sort of AAR thing. I think we have 25 units and 23 of them have a call for paper. So a couple ones we didn't have. But, you know, it's a baby AAR. So if you are... If you have not been to AAR and you're thinking, I would like to dip my toe in, or you're a grad student, you want to dip your toe in. Mm-hmm. It's the nicest audience, honestly. We would absolutely love to have, it's a good starter. And even if you're not, and you want to put some stuff on your CV, also good.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like I said, Greenville, cool town. So that's my summer of rejection second paper.
I'm
sad about that one. I did think about doing Fuck Karl Barth, but that one in comparison seemed far more obvious about why it was not. This one has always been a bit of a conundrum to me.
No, they paid I'm really glad. Me to like do I said, it. I like that that's out in the world now. At least on our smaller scale, but, and I'm just really loving this summer of rejection series. I'm excited, too, for next week, for my, shark heart discussion. But
yes,
and
yes.
For my,
well, and, for the, and we're here to encourage you that, oh, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, I'm here. I'm excited because I get to see the Gibbonsons here. Next week.
You do. We're going, we're also on our summer of beach continues to Christy. Yeah, they'll get to hang out, which, and now we'll get to hang out too. I keep saying it's you and Stuart, but I'm also going to be there.
You're also coming.
I got a plane ticket as well. I also got a plane ticket. So. You know, I shall be there too in case you want to hang out or whatever. No big deal. But yeah, it's just to encourage you guys that we all get rejected. To be in academics is to be rejected. And this project took me a full year of write-ups, of creating surveys. And again, it was all funded by the Scottish government. I got buyouts from classes, Glasgow to do it. And in the end, it got published again with the Scottish government, but not in a journal. And, you know, you can do it by the book and it is what it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now I get rejected all the time and I don't even notice. I think I get rejected on like a daily basis in my email, and I'm like, oh, delete.
The amount of rejection I've faced at this stage in my life is astounding, honestly. It's also why I like to tell my students, like, when I go off on how amazing I am in class, it's not because I'm incredibly narcissistic. It's because somebody has to say it or I'll die.
Pumping ourselves up. When you heard earlier, Christy and I being like, they're all bad. Just know that that's because we cry a lot.
A lot. A lot.
So yeah. Get those PhD kits.
Join. All right.
Well, we will see you later.
We will see you next week. Thanks. All right.